You're listening to the Beauty Brain Show, where real scientists answer your beauty questions. And now, here's Randy and Perry.
Hello and welcome to the Beauty Brains, a show where two cosmetic chemists prove that beauty doesn't have to be brainless. I'm Perry Romanowski, one half of the Beauty Brains, and...
I'm the other half, I guess, Randy Schuler. I'm the front half, Perry's the back half. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Hello, Randy. It's good to see you on this fine winter's day. We've got a big show today, one in which we actually answer beauty questions.
let's do it.
In fact, if you stay tuned, you'll learn whether hand cream stops skin from regenerating, whether quinoa or mooring oil will be the next super beauty ingredient, if glow-in-the-dark nail polish is safe to use, and more answers to your beauty questions. Incidentally, if you have a beauty question, you can just record yourself. We love recorded beauty questions, although we take them as emails. We do that, too.
Cuneiform, whatever you got, we'll take. Right.
But the recorded ones are best. And to do that, you just take your smartphone out, you record it on the smartphone, and then you email that to us at...
TheBeautyBrains@gmail.com.
That's right. Hey, but first I want to check in with you before we get on with the show, Randy. So did you win that $1 billion? Or,
What is with you in this new lottery obsession?
Well, you know, when it gets to be $1.5 billion, you kind of catch the lottery bug.
Okay.
I mean, imagine all of that anti-aging cream you could have bought for $1.5 billion.
Okay.
Actually, the Olay brand is about a $1.5 billion brand, right? So you could have bought up their entire stock for a year,
every
right?
Every single Olay product in the world.
You know, Randy, I personally don't play lottery, except for those scratch-off ones that you get for birthday cards. Which reminds me, remember when we were in the lab and we used to do that lottery project with everyone?
The lottery project? Oh, we went in together. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
The weekly scratch-off, right. And everybody would throw in a buck, and after a year... I think we were at a $60. You know what my favorite part of that little project was?
I know my favorite part, but tell me yours.
Well, I enjoyed collecting the lottery shavings.
Okay, exactly. So the idea there was, and I think this was my idea, if I recall correctly, that if you collect the scratchings off the ticket, that little silvery stuff that you shear off, you save that. And then we found a solvent for it, and I want to say it was acetone. I don't remember exactly, but so you can redissolve that silvery material and then paint it back on over the lottery ticket. The idea being, you take a scratch off ticket, you scratch it off, you know it's a loser, you paint back over it so it can be scratched off again, and then you sell it to somebody else. Right? It's genius.
Or you just give it in birthday cards.
No, I want to sell it to somebody else. So it was, in my opinion, a pure genius way to make money off of hacking a lottery ticket.
Oh, it was genius. Unfortunately, somehow I ended up with this 8-ounce jar of lottery shavings that's still in my basement.
There'll be a picture of that in the show notes. Please, you know, please let there be a picture of that in the show notes.
Yeah, lest people think that I'm the only odd one on the show, Randy had that idea.
anyway. Oddness is a spectrum, my friend.
Exactly. All right, Randy, why don't we get started with the beauty questions today? We have an audio one today, don't we?
Yeah, this one comes to us from Julia, all the way from Germany.
Hi, Beauty Brains. This is Julia from Germany, and I have a question for you. I have very dry skin on my hands and eczema, so I use hand cream a lot. I use special hand cream, perfume-free, with urea or the likes. And I recently read that you should not use too much hand cream because then the skin of your hands cannot regenerate properly anymore. The article said that the skin would become dependent on the hand cream and that it would be detrimental to the regeneration processes in the skin. I personally don't find that very conclusive, but I wanted to hear what you have to say about this. Okay, I look forward to your answer, and thank you very much.
You know, I wish Julia would have included a link to that article so we could get more details. But without further information, we have to say that sounds like, misunderstanding or something.
That's sketchy.
You know, there's nothing about the chemistry of hand creams or other skin moisturizers for that matter that would stop the skin from regenerating. Mm. In fact, you know, some products actually speed up the regeneration by promoting cell turnover, exfoliating products. You know, products like, you know, AHAs, they help to slough off the upper layer of dead skins, and then that triggers the production of fresh skins below.
Right.
Now, there is one aspect of the process of cell turnover that could account for the article that Julie read. So let's try to explain this here.
Right.
As we just said, when you remove the upper dead layer of skin, it triggers the production of more new skin cells. The opposite is true to some extent, right? When you hydrate the upper layers of skin, well, you actually slow down that sloughing off process a little bit. And so that means there's less of a call for new skin cells to be produced. So in that sense, lotions, I guess, could slow down the skin regeneration process. You know, but slightly slowing down the skin regeneration process is not really the same as stopping it altogether.
Yeah,
right?
It's not like a lotion is going to prevent new skin cells from being grown at the basal layer in the dermis, right? And then, you know, the cells are pushed upward, and as they go up through the seven layers of skin, they dry out and flatten out, and eventually they get to the surface where they're just that dead layer of stratum corneum.
Right.
So you're not going to stop that. Now, can you modulate the timing of it a little bit depending on how dry or, you know, moisturized your skin is? Maybe there's a little wiggle room, but no, it's not going to stop your skin from regenerating.
It also might interfere with the skin's own natural moisturizing factor production, right?
Mm.
And so if your skin on the outer layer, it stays moisturized, your skin's not going to produce those natural moisturizing factors as much. And so it could interfere with that, but, you know.
Yeah, but that's still theoretical, and I don't know if it would do that to an extent. I've never seen any data that it would do that to an extent where it would impair, you know, your skin's ability to moisturize itself.
Right. Absolutely. So,
okay.
So no, your skin is not going to get used to moisturizers and stop growing. So.
All right. There you go, Julia. Hey, you actually, Perry, kudos to you. At the top of the show, you teased this next story I'm going to do, and you actually pronounced the ingredient correctly. Because I had at one point had to look this up. I didn't know how to pronounce quinoa. I always thought it was quinoa in my head, right? I would see it. It's quinoa. But no, it's quinoa.
Obviously, your wife doesn't make quinoa for dinner for you.
Or if she does, she doesn't talk about it, apparently.
Right.
So here's a question from Leslie about quinoa. She says, quinoa is everywhere. Since I started eating Panera's quinoa bowl, I notice it popping up in beauty products all over the place. I know it's good to eat, but does it have any beauty benefits?
Wait, they make bowls out of quinoa?
Apparently you don't go to Panera to eat.
No, I don't. You mean the land of overpriced soup and roll?
Now featuring
quinoa.
No,
we love Panera, especially if they want to be a sponsor on this.
Well, all right, so let me try and bring Leslie up to speed on quinoa. You know, that's one of the ancient grains that are quite popular now. And this one in particular is rich in fatty acids, minerals, antioxidants, and proteins. So I don't think there's any doubt it's, you know, a good part of a healthy diet. But does it do anything when applied topically? That's another question. So first we have to look at the different versions of quinoa that are available for use in cosmetics, because there are two different kinds and they don't deliver the same beauty benefits. There's hydrolyzed quinoa and there's quinoa seed extract. So the first one, the hydrolyzed quinoa, is the form that I've seen most used in hair and skin products, and it only contains the protein from the grain. Now those proteins, because they're hydrolyzed, they're chopped up into little bits, and that's what makes them water soluble.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of kinds of hydrolyzed proteins used in cosmetics. Typically, they're used because they're film formers, which means they can help moisturize skin and to some extent strengthen your hair. These types of proteins provide benefit from a leave-on product, but they don't really do much of anything from a rinse-out product because they're not chemically modified to stick to your skin or hair. You know, they're just going to rinse down the drain. I did see one example of this type of quinoa being used in Paul Mitchell's Ultimate Color Shampoo. I thought, according to Paul's website, is it presumptuous to be on a first-name basis with Paul Mitchell? We're industry bigwigs. That should be okay, right?
That should be okay, yeah.
So Paul's website says that quinoa was, quote, discovered by the Incas thousands of years ago, and that it is rich in amino acids that penetrate into the hair and bond like a magnet, creating a protective shield. That's not exactly true, but in the spirit, right? He's got sort of the rough idea about how these proteins could work if left on the hair.
It's sort of metaphorical, though, right?
I'm not really sure that was a metaphor, but anyway,
bond to hair like a magnet.
Well, oh, that would, or is that in that an analogy?
That's a metaphor.
Wait, it's a simile.
Man. No, simile is like or at.
Well, it says a magnet.
You're right. I
think you should apologize to me in front of the listeners.
I am. I'm going to lose my grammar girl card.
All right. So that's the first version. The second version of this ancient grain is the quinoa extract. Now, the extract comes from the seed oil, which makes it a better moisturizer and potentially makes it able to scavenge free radicals.
Antioxidant,
right,
sure.
Exactly. So an example of a product that uses this version is the Laneige Waterbank Eye Gel. And this one supposedly, quote, penetrates the gentle eye area, preventing dryness and protecting from external aggressors. By the way, it's a bit of a sidebar, but my favorite claim for this Laneige product is that it contains, and I'm quoting here, minuscule particles of hydroionized mineral water. That's much better than those big chunky pieces of regular water.
those non-ionized water.
Right. So the bottom line here is, you know, quinoa probably doesn't really provide much extra benefit, you know, especially, you know, in like that Paul Mitchell shampoo where it's rinsed off and it's not in there at a very high concentration anyway.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not worth spending a lot of extra money on. But, you know, of the two forms, the seed extract is probably likely to be the more effective. So look for the words quinoa extract on the label if that is something you're interested in shopping for.
Right. Could be the next Moroccan oil.
Funny you should mention that. We're going to get to some oily question later.
Exactly. But first, how about this question from Ramona from Lithuania?
Ah.
She says, I am from Europe, Lithuania to be exact, and here we have a local cosmetic company, the ODA. In Lithuanian, it means skin. Recently, they released a new product, a skin balm. It's supposed to cure wounds, regenerate skin, and it has a strong anti-inflammatory effect. I've tried it on small cracks on my hands, and it kind of helped. I also tried to cure a runny nose with it, and the next day, it was gone. Wait, she lost her nose?
The runniness, I think.
Oh, gotcha. It's also supposed to help stop cold sore spots becoming bigger and to cure pimples on your face, too. Could you please review the ingredients and explain the magic?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an impressive product if it could do all of that stuff, huh? Well, we looked at this product and found that it contains triethylene glycol, ethyl carbital, lanthan oxide, and glycerol. Mm-hmm. The active ingredient appears to be lanthan oxide, which, according to at least one source, can suppress bacteria and viruses. I'm guessing that's why they claim it works on pimples and cold sores, as well as common cold virus that can stop a running nose, right? And I think the other ingredients are just kind of the delivery vehicles, right?
Yeah, it looks like. Looks that way.
Yeah. The article I read says there's not much safety data for this ingredient, at least in the nanoparticle form, mm-hmm. which makes me a little nervous. You know, I don't know about Lithuania, but I expect that lanthanum oxide would not be a... What's that?
You mean lanthanum? Lanthanum?
Lanthanum,
is that what you're
right.
saying? Checking.
I should really put my glasses on, right? Because my pronunciation gets better while I'm wearing glasses. So lanthanum oxide... would not be allowed as an ingredient here in the U.S. And really, that's because, in fact, none of these claims you could make would be permissible in the U.S.,
these
right?
These are all drug claims here.
They're all drug claims. In fact, products like acne products, like cold sore medicine and cold medicine are all considered drugs. And if you can buy them in a drugstore like Walgreens or CVS, then they're over-the-counter drugs.
Right, you don't need a prescription.
Exactly. And over-the-counter drugs in the U.S. are regulated by these things we call a monograph. And in a monograph, they list exactly the ingredients that you're allowed to use and the percentages you're allowed to use. They also insist on the claims that you're allowed to make about your products. That's why pretty much a sunscreen is a sunscreen is a sunscreen. If it has the correct SPF value... you can count on it's going to protect you at that level. Now, there's going to be some aesthetic differences, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't regulate like the extra ingredients, but the active ingredients are all regulated by the FDA. And for all of these, for acne products, cold medicine, they're all regulated by the FDA. So this product wouldn't be allowed in the U.S., at least to make these claims. And it's unlikely that this single product could be effective for all of those different things, right? What do you think?
Well, again, I mean, just because this article, I'm not sure if there's a link here, but the article you found, you know, talks about it having some antiviral properties. So, you know, maybe when, you know, formulated as a medicant, it may have some benefit. But, you know, it's not going to cure all these things when you just rub it on your skin.
And to say something is an antiviral kind of makes it seem like all viruses are the same. And they'll all die from the same thing, right? But
well,
that's
yeah,
not true.
It may
right?
kill some viruses preferentially. Right. Yeah, that's a good point too.
Exactly. So
very good. All right. Well, that's. But I think it's cool just because we don't get many questions from Lithuania. So there you go. Thank yeah. you, Ramona.
And we don't get a lot of opportunity to say lanthanum oxide.
you apparently need the practice.
Apparently.
All right. You asked about Morocco oil a little bit ago, and you're kind of on the same wavelength as Sheila Marie, who sent in a question. She says that her aunt bought her Infusium 23 Miracle Therapy Shampoo with Moringa oil. I know you guys have talked about argan oil, Moroccan oil, rosehip oil, sesame seed oil, coconut oil, etc., but can you talk about Moringa oil and the perceived benefits it has? So my first question in response to her question is, what the hell is Moringa oil? yeah. There's so many of these things. You can't even keep track of these exotic oils, you know, in cosmetics these days. But
I'm guessing it's a triglyceride.
Aren't they all? So I looked this one up. It comes from, not surprisingly, the seeds of the Moringa oleifera plant, which is known as the drumstick tree. And actually, I've seen a couple of these around. The seed pods are really, really like long and thin. I mean, they kind of look like drumsticks. I guess that's where it got its name. Not the ice cream treat, by the way. I love drumsticks.
I am a huge fan of the drumstick, too.
But anyway.
If Good Humor wants to sponsor the show, we'd be happy to talk about them.
You know, sometimes I think you're a good businessman, but you just offered for us to get paid in ice cream, which I don't really think is...
But I like ice cream.
Yeah, fine. So anyway, yeah, it seems like, you know, every couple of months somebody's touting the latest and greatest exotic natural oil. I think in most of these cases, it's just, you know, companies are trying to make their products sound more exotic. Because when you look at the composition of some of these, you know, rare tropical oils, they're really not all that different than some of the conventional ones. So
right.
Moringa oil, in case in hand, it's largely similar to olive oil.
Now, not surprising.
Yeah, both have oleic acid as their primary constituent. It's about 75% oleic acid in the case of Moringa oil, you know, about 70-71% in the case of olive oil, depending on where the olives came from and so forth. Now, Moringa oil also contains around 5-10% palmitic acid and another 5-10% of bahenic acid. And in fact, sometimes it's called Ben oil because of that pretty good slug of bahenic acid.
Yeah, wow.
So, but I mean, the quick answer is it's going to behave mostly like olive oil because its main constituent is the same as olive oil. Now, Sheila Marie asked about argan oil, which is also known as Moroccan oil, you know, just to compare it to another tropical oil. It has about half as much oleic, but it has a good slug of linoleic, which is an essential fatty acid, and that's really good for skin. That one contains palmitic acid as well. So, you know, all these acids, and not to confuse you with all the fatty acids, but all these oils will moisturize skin to some extent. But their chemical composition is, you know, going to vary depending on their source. As I said, because Moringa is so rich in oleic, I'd expect it to behave like olive oil. And remember, olive oil does not penetrate hair like coconut oil does. You know, coconut right. oil, which was another one that she mentioned, and we have talked about that several times, has just that right configuration. The size of the molecule and the configuration of the molecule is such that it can slip inside your hair, sort of waterproof it from the inside out. Most other oils just tend to sit on the surface.
Generally speaking, though, the longer chain fatty acid molecules will moisturize better. And the reason that, you know, coconut oil penetrates better is because it's a shorter chain.
Yeah,
it's mostly C12. When you see the Ben oil, or we're talking about linoleic, the linoleic or oleic, those are C18. Where the coconut oil is mostly C12, so it's a shorter, and bahenic is C22. So the longer chains are more moisturizing, the shorter chains penetrate better.
So let me just sum up, bigger is better. Good?
Well, for moisturizing, yeah.
What else would I be talking about? So anyway, back to Sheila's question. What does this mean for this Infusium product that she mentioned? Not much, really. And the reason I say that is, first of all, you know, this oil is not the primary active ingredient in the formula. I mean, both right. the shampoo and conditioner appear to be typical, you know, Procter & Gamble formulas. By the way, in case our listening audience didn't know, Infusium is another P&G brand. So you're going
to
see...
For now, I wonder if they got sold off to Coty.
Oh, I don't think Coty bought... I don't think Coty bought that one, but that's a good question. So it's going to use, you know, the same basic ingredients as those other P&G formulas. Doesn't mean it's not a good product. It just means it's nothing special. And the oil certainly isn't making anything special. Secondly, both the shampoo and conditioner are rinse out products. So an oil like this isn't going to deposit on the hair from a rinse out product. And thirdly, I suspect that the Infusium only contains a token amount of the material anyway. If you look at the ingredient list, it's after sterile conium chloride, which could be between half and 3%. And it's down just above panthenol and propylparaben, which are probably well below 1%. So if I had to guess, I'd say there's less than 1% of this oil in the formula to begin with. So for those three reasons, I wouldn't expect this really does much. So might be a great product, probably, Sheila, but don't expect it to be anything magic.
It's not because of the Morelli
Moringa oil. Morelli oil. We're talking about that next week. Come back and listen to us talking about Morelli oil. Okay. Before we get on to what may be our last question, I'm not sure how much time we've got left here, but I want to read a couple quick iTunes reviews. We like to do that every week because, mainly because we promised our listeners if you wrote us a review, we'd give you a shout out. But it really is important to the podcast and just to get our message out that, the iTunes reviews help us climb the charts. More people hear about us and help spread the word of, you know, people being skeptical about their beauty. So this week we've got two reviews. The first one comes from Nerdy Drummer Girl. And she says, "This is a beauty podcast with a major difference. It's based on science instead of hype. It's so refreshing to hear someone talk about the beauty industry in a way based on evidence instead of fear or marketing. These guys aren't trying to sell you anything. We're just teaching you how to think critically about the things you hear about beauty." And this is my favorite part. She says, "I can't even read some of the beauty blogs that I used to anymore because now I can see where they were just spreading hype." We've actually spoiled other beauty podcasts for Nerdy Drummer Girl. And then one more quick one. This one comes from Lynn RP, who says, "Smart, informative, hugely useful, and fun. If you're tired of being a makeup skincare buying rube, you've come to the right place. The information in this podcast and their blog can save you hundreds of dollars." So thank you for that, Lynn RP. Wow.
And you know, we actually have a book on that, a free report, actually. If you go to thebeautybrains.com, you can sign up for our free report, which tells you how you can save, over $500 a year?
There's all kinds of tips in there about how to read ingredient lists and how not to be tricked by weasel words and other things that the marketers use. I mean, it's some of the things we've talked about on the show before, but it's all put together in a handy little guide. Very, very useful. Yeah. And all you have to do is go sign up for our email list. You're not going to get that information anyplace else, anybody. That's exclusively for our subscribers.
That's right. But if you get on that, sign up for that email list, you get that for free, no charge.
There you go.
Just like this program, right?
Just like it.
All right, well, I think we've got time for two more questions.
All right, sounds good.
I'll take the next one.
All right.
And the question comes from Sarah in the forums. She says, "Did you guys ever talk about the video that was going around last year that nail salon workers are exposed to a lot of dangerous fumes and that 90% of nail product chemicals haven't been evaluated for safety?" Mm. We'll put a link in the show notes for that. Well, we've talked about many times the idea that the dose makes the poison, and it's tragic that nail salon workers may be exposed to dangerous levels of chemicals, and in some cases, if they're not proper hoods or
ventilation isn't proper, they're not wearing the right kind of masks. I mean, that is a serious problem.
That is a problem. You know, however, it's not true that 90% of nail product ingredients haven't been tested for safety. And I mean, you can just prove this for yourself, right? Just look at the ingredient list for any nail polish and then pick a few of those ingredients, Google their names with safety assessment, and you'll find, you know, safety data. Actually, there's a website called the Cosmetic Ingredient Review. Mm-hmm. And we'll put a link to the show notes, but go right there is the list. These are ingredients that have been evaluated by independent scientists looking at the safety of cosmetic ingredients. So the Cosmetic Ingredient Review, and you can look up exactly the science papers that are published on the safety of ingredients, and you'll quickly find that not 90% of it, that the claim is just ridiculous.
Well, quite now, frankly, you could argue that, you know, maybe, you know, there's not enough safety testing data in some cases, or maybe the a certain ingredient hasn't been tested in combination with another ingredient, or, you know, I mean, there may be some flaws in the data, and really that's for toxicologists to argue over, not lay people, yeah, or even just formulators like ourselves. But you cannot, it with a you know, being intellectually honest, you cannot say that 90% of the ingredients have not been safety tested.
Right, absolutely. In fact, in the case of like salon workers, the EPA would crack down on those outfits,
right,
if that were the case, right?
Right, because that much exposure could, you know, could be problematic.
Yeah, workplace safety issues there.
Exactly. So. All right, we've got time for one more. This one comes to us from Anonymous, who asks, is it safe to make your own glow-in-the-dark nail polish by mixing regular nail polish with the chemicals from a glow stick? I found these instructions on WikiHow. And all right, I'll put the link in the show notes if you guys promise me don't go do this, okay?
Like more beauty. We should call this segment Hacking Beauty Hacks.
Oh, I like that. And we touched on this a little bit last week, but it amazes me that people are so afraid that big cosmetics are selling unsafe, toxic products. But if they're doing it themselves at home, hey, what the hell? I'll throw together any kind of household or industrial cleaning product I got. I'll throw that together and slather it on my body, no problem. It's like,
sure.
Remember, I don't know, it was a while ago, last year, maybe we talked about using fabric softener on hair and skin.
Right.
So, you know, right, now there's this nail polish hack. I mean, come on, people. This is not a good idea.
These people kind of remind me of the people who, like, will chastise you for drinking a Diet Coke while they're smoking their cigarettes.
There you go. So, all right, let's you know, stop proselytizing, and let me tell you specifically why this is a bad idea. Glow sticks contain, here's how these things are built, in case you didn't know, right? They contain a small inner tube, it's usually a glass vial of hydrogen peroxide, and that's suspended in a chemical known as diphenyl oxalate. Now, when you bend the plastic outer coating of the glow stick, that glass tube breaks open, and right, so the hydrogen peroxide and the diphenyl oxalate can mix, and this the reaction that results from that mixture is this unstable compound. Now, this unstable intermediate quickly breaks down to release energy, and that energy is picked up by the pigments that are in the glow stick, which can be different colors, and that's what causes them to glow. Now, none of these chemicals, with the exception of perhaps the hydrogen peroxide, because that is used in beauty products, but none of those other chemicals are intended to meet the same safety testing requirements as those used in cosmetics. These
right,
should never be coming in contact with your skin. Now, this is especially concerning since if you're doing this for a nail polish, you know, you may accidentally ingest some of those chemicals as you eat, as you touch your fingers to your mouth, and so forth. And of course, there's always just the potential for allergic reactions putting the stuff on your skin as well. So the bottom line is, this is not a good idea. Don't be putting chemicals on your skin that haven't been proven safe for skin contact.
Yeah, the whole idea of this just seems crazy to me. Although it does kind of seem like a cool product if you can make it, right? Hey, I'm glowing in the dark.
Have the attorneys left the studio? What's going on?
Well, I think if you want to glow in the dark, you should, you know, use standard cosmetics, but use a black light, right?
There you go. It's not quite the same effect, but fair enough.
No, not quite.
All right, Perry, we're out of time.
Well, you know, it is coming at the end of the month, and you know what I just did?
I'm afraid, so afraid to ask.
I just finished my fourth book of the year.
Okay.
It was a book by Ray Bradbury called The Illustrated Man.
Oh, tattoos, which come up a lot on the show.
Yeah, very cool. It was an excellent read. You know, it's a collection of weird short stories that done only in the way that Bradbury could do it.
Yeah.
You know, very reminiscent of the Martian Chronicles. Mm-hmm. You ever read that
Absolutely.
One? Yeah, great stuff. And if you want to get that audio version of that book, then we've got a deal for you. We've teamed up with Audible.com to get you started. If you sign up through our link, audibletrial.com/beautybrains, you can download The Illustrated Man as your free book, and you can also support the show. Of course, if you prefer your first free book to be something beauty-related, you could download our own book, The Beauty Aisle Insider, or pretty much any other book. Just sign up through our link, audibletrial.com/beautybrains, for a 30-day trial, which, you know, you can cancel that at any time, but you get to still keep that free audiobook. So go to audibletrial.com/beautybrains today.
And I'll put that link in the show notes for you guys. Becca, if you ever stop listening to so many audiobooks, we are screwed in terms of sponsorship. That is the only thing that's driving income for this podcast.
Well, one of my goals is to read 50 books this year, so once a week, I'll be all right.
All right, very good. Well, thanks for that. All right, well, now we really are out of time, Perry, so let me just sign off by reminding everybody to be brainy about your beauty.
All right, so I got some clear nail polish, 3 different colored glow sticks, 3 little vessels to mix in, a saw to cut open the glow sticks, a little dish to help with the cutting, and a paper towel.